Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
We want to know, how long are you waiting on a hospital waiting list? Because medics warn that waiting lists could pass 1 million this winter. There's already been an increase of over 200,000 patients in less than 18 months. Marie is with me on the line today. Marie, tell us your experience.
Basically, my partner was very ill for quite a time, and the doctors referred him to the hospital. The waiting list was huge, and it was cancelled a couple of times. Eventually, he collapsed and was taken into hospital. And after a while, he was diagnosed with a very serious illness, which left him in hospital for 9 months. Now, the diagnosis itself even was serious, but it came from the fact that I got in touch with a nephrologist, family member in America, who had to get in touch with the hospital and was able to tell them a little bit of his background.
Nice.
Otherwise, they were sending him home again. You know, it was like, it was a horrific time. Plus, had he been diagnosed much earlier, his condition would have been completely different. It was something that he could have had treatment for and be home in 3 weeks instead of 9 months in hospital and then rehabilitation, and now disabilities, including neuropathy, etc., that he wouldn't have had.
How long was he on that initial waiting list for, Marie?
He was on the initial waiting list for, they had sent him out an appointment for a year ahead of when he had been to the doctor. Now, at this stage, I knew he really wasn't well, so I was pushing and ringing and asking for cancellation lists, etc. But then he collapsed.
So it would have been initially 12 months, really, for that yeah. first appointment.
Yeah.
Albeit
yeah.
then, obviously, you know, in that period of time, as you say, he collapsed, and you brought him to hospital. Yeah. I suppose because he went through maybe
he went through A&E. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and then he was...
And I know this sounds strange, but we were lucky because he went through A&E on Christmas Eve and it was really, really quiet. So they were quicker at assessing him in triage, and he was taken into a ward, you know. But I also feel anyway that the lack of consistency in the hospital filing system is partly to blame, because there's a lot of people like him who are waiting on appointments and end up going in through A&E. And, like, are their appointments cancelled? Like, you know, if they looked on his file and it was a central file, they could say, OK, he's in hospital. Mm-hmm. We can take him off the list for future appointments. Or people who get better and don't cancel them. You know, that sometimes there isn't a consistent follow-up.
No, and look, and I know there's often, you know, maybe from time to time or each year, there's some set of figures released, you know, detailing the number of people that just, the no-shows, the people that didn't show up. But as you say, often that might be the case, that perhaps that person has actually, they've had that appointment, but they've had it because they've gone via A&E.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I do remember at one stage when my partner was in hospital, when I went in, he said, oh, I just looked at my phone and I should have had an appointment yesterday in X hospital at such a time. But of course, he was ill and we were way past thinking about our checking. And unfortunately now, a lot of these are sent by email or text, not physical post, the reminders. Mm. So with the results that if you're in hospital, you're not really checking on these things, and you know, so yeah, so those appointments are just lost. I'm sure there's appointments lost every single
absolutely.
Day.
Absolutely. The initial letter, the initial date that your partner got for that 12-month or that appointment that wasn't going to happen for 12 months, what was both of your reaction when you got that date a year away, Marie?
Like, devastated. You know, it really was. And we even tried to go and get a private appointment. No, believe it or not, the private appointment was like 3 to 4 months, which, you know, we would have taken. But as it turned out then, talking to, as I said, somebody who I knew, they were saying, look, I think stay where you are. You know, this is where you need to be. Just keep ringing them. Mm. You know, which I did. I would ring, you know, and as I said, possibly would have got one earlier had he not collapsed. But the point was, he had been sick for so long. Anyway, that, like, every day made a difference. And by the time he started, it was chemotherapy. The chemotherapy he started would have been completely different outcome. If he, you know, he only has one kidney, and this is what was affected.
Yeah.
So, had he been diagnosed earlier? Yes, sorry.
In the aftermath of all of that treatment, how was he doing after that?
He's doing well. He's fabulous. He's great. He's working, but I mean, he walks with a crutch. He is a sports coach. He was very fit. He can't walk very far now. And that was due to it attacking his nervous system and causing severe neuropathy, which won't go.
We love that.
And he wouldn't have had.
Yeah.
You know, if it had been diagnosed earlier.
The listener here has got in touch, Marie, just tuned in to you this afternoon to say, listening to Marie, I actually got my knee replacement carried out last year. I was told that if I didn't go for private treatment, it was going to be a 3-year wait to try and get that appointment. I was in absolute agony. Another texter has got in contact to say, I keep getting reminders and appointments for my husband, who passed away in January. You see, and that's the kind of system you're talking about, where surely these
details can be
updated.
That's it. I mean, if there was a central system, I mean, you know, but like, I mean, I know it's very morbid to talk about, but if they check every 6 months with the death register and whatever, I mean, through the central system, I'm not saying somebody sit down, but I mean, his medical records, he was transferred from heart ward to kidney ward because, as I said, when they were sending him home, I was concerned that he wasn't well, and they eventually diagnosed this. But when he went there, he had a thing called, I think it's peripheral neuropathy, a good bar, but he kept collapsing, and it was due to the drop of blood pressure. When he went to the new ward, they didn't know why he was collapsing. I had to explain to them, no, this isn't like a stroke or whatever. This is part of his condition. And they were like, oh, okay, we didn't know that. And I had to explain it.
You were
then
the central
the
system.
Record. Yes, I was the central system.
You were the record holder.
You know, and if, you know, my attitude is, if they, it had been my parents who are much older, who were much older, they wouldn't have known this information. I was very up to date because of my sister-in-law, and she kept me up to date and would say, ask this, ask that, tell them this, tell them that. So I was very, very fortunate to have an inside track, for want of a better word. But not everybody does.
No, well, look, I'm glad to hear, Marie, that he was seen and he's doing well. And thank you for getting in touch to share that experience with us. We're talking about the number of people waiting in hospital appointments across the country, and how long are you waiting on that particular hospital waiting list too. The email is lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. Yvonne is on the line. Yvonne, you were listening to Marie there. You've had your own experience with hospital wait times. Tell us about it.
Hi.
How are you, Yvonne?
I think I may have got confused with your email, with your message this morning. Because I had chicken.
No, that's no problem at all. But you know what, Yvonne, we're just going to try and reconnect with you there. Just bear with us there if you can for a moment. Brian Turner is with me on the line, health economist in Cork University Business School. Brian, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Andrew.
So, Brian, 1 million people, the guts of 1 million people waiting for some form of treatment in hospitals across the country. I mean, it for people listening to this today, it's a staggering figure, isn't it?
It is. And I suppose the bigger concern really is that there's not really much progress being made on reducing it. So we've had initiatives in the past that have reduced it a little bit, and then it's gone back up again. So we seem to have a kind of a stubbornly high waiting list in the public system. Now, of the people who are waiting, a significant majority are waiting to get their first outpatient appointment. So once they get the first outpatient appointment, then they go into, if they're recommended for treatment, then they would go on the inpatient or day case waiting list. So there's a bit of movement between the lists. But the biggest chunk of the waiting list is people trying to get to see the consultant for the first time, so that they can determine whether or not they need treatment, or you know, whether medication might suffice, or whatever the case may be. So that's kind of the biggest element of it. And I suppose the other element is the length of time for which people are waiting. Now, in fairness, we have made some progress on that. So the National Treatment Purchase Fund breaks down the figures of waiting times, as of waiting lists, by length of waiting time. And we had a much higher proportion of people waiting a longer length of time, so more than 18 months, more than 12 months. That has come down. So they have been kind of focusing on the longest waiters in recent years, and that has improved the situation in terms of the length of waiting time. But the waiting lists themselves remain fairly high.
Like 200,000 patients, an increase of 200,000 patients in less than 2 months. Or sorry, in less than 18 months, Brian, I should say. Like, it's the problem is that the issue seems to be getting worse, even for the people that are trying to get into that initial breakthrough in the system.
Exactly. And I suppose one of the things that we're seeing in Ireland and indeed internationally as well is kind of an increase in demand for healthcare services because we have a growing and an aging population. So with the growing population, more people are actually here, and obviously the higher the population, the higher the number of people who are going to need treatment. And the aging effect of the population, I mean, as we get older, our medical care needs increase. So combine the two and you're seeing an increase in demand on the system, and the capacity hasn't been kind of matching that in certain areas. Now, in certain areas it has, but in certain areas it hasn't. And this is one of the reasons behind the increase in the waiting list. And of course, then the increase in the waiting list are the access issues in terms of getting into the public system. That's one of the main drivers of demand for private health insurance. So, you know, more people are taking out private health insurance because they're concerned about being able to get treated in a timely fashion in the public system. Now, this launch of care, which is kind of the long-term plan for the health system, that envisages an improvement in the public system. So they want to invest in the public system, reduce waiting times, and thereby reduce the need for people to get private health insurance. But I suspect that most people are going to want to see the improvements happening first before they drop the health insurance cover.
The Irish Independent today, Brian, are reporting that the increases since April have included breast surgery, dermatology, cardiology, gynecology, orthopedics, and endoscopy. And one of the things that kind of struck me this morning when I was looking at this, when you think about it, three of the public screening systems that we operate in this country, between breast check, we have the colon screening, and we also have the cervical screening. To those public screenings, albeit they're absolutely, you know, they're so vital that people participate in them, are they adding then to these lists?
I'm not sure they're adding to the demand per se. I suppose they're catching people at an earlier stage. So, you know, the people who may be referred for treatment as a result of screening probably would have been referred for treatment at some point anyway. But the idea of screening is that we catch them at an earlier stage. So, as you say, they're vital programs.
Absolutely,
and they do work. So I'm not sure they necessarily are kind of behind the increase in the figures to any great extent, maybe perhaps at a marginal level, but it's more kind of a timing issue in terms of catching people earlier with the screening programs.
This texter here tells me they've currently been waiting for 1 year on a waiting list for a hysterectomy. They have other issues as well, other problems that now mean that they're actually unable to leave their house. Another texter says, I was on the public waiting list when I knew I wouldn't need the appointment. I rang the hospital and cancelled it. This allowed somebody else to take my spot. It's up to us as the patients to ring and cancel the appointment if it's not needed or if we're unable to attend. Are we likely to see any decrease to these figures, Brian, in the near future?
I wouldn't kind of foresee any significant decrease in the short term. No, they might plateau and they might come down a little bit. But I mean, I can't imagine that we're going to be here in 12 months time or 2 years time talking about a halving of the waiting list. I mean, much as it would be great if that were the case, but I suspect that they are going to remain relatively high for some time. Now, there are certain waiting list initiatives, certainly at local levels in different hospitals, which work, but they don't necessarily then get rolled out at a national level. So there are kind of pockets of successes around the system as well. But I think at a national level, I suspect that these figures are going to remain high. But I salute your texter there who said that they cancelled the appointment, because that is one of the reasons why a lot of numbers come on the waiting list. So somebody might go to the GP, their GP might say, look, do you have health insurance? And if they say yes, well, they say, right, we'll refer you to both the public system and the private system and then take whichever one comes first. And a lot of times people do that, and the private system is the one that often comes first, but they may not then cancel the public system. So as one of your previous callers mentioned, like there is an issue in terms of no-shows. So now, again, that is not by any means a majority of the waiting list.
No.
So it's a relatively small number. But it would also help if people did that, if people were quite diligent about cancelling appointments if they no longer need them.
Bernard Bulvani, who's an advocate with Access for All Ireland, is joining us too, Brian. What's your experience with hospital waiting lists, Bernard?
Hi, Andrea. Thanks very much for having me on. This is a really interesting one in that, particularly over the last sort of year and a half to 2 years, we've seen waiting lists and kids who are transitioning into adult services who would have already accessed the service been taken out of that service and automatically been put on a waiting list. In our own experience now, we've had ophthalmology from a very young age due to the nature of my daughter's disability and the fact that actually her eyesight, and if anything goes wrong, is one of the red flags if something is happening with her shunt or whatever. So
yeah.
We would have regular appointments with a clinic here in North Dublin and built up a great relationship with her ophthalmologist, her consultant, wonderful woman. We had her for 13 years. Just before Christmas, we got a letter stating that's gone. So that service is gone now. No preemptive, just a letter saying that service is gone. Do you want to go look for another one? Or if you want to stay on the list.
Gone where?
It was discontinued. They just pulled it out, and I mean, to the horror of a lot of families now, and that's the truth of it. And then we were asked, do you want to go look for your own, or what do you want? Effectively, do you want us to find one for you? Now, through the nature of my daughter's disability, this is an intrinsic part of her healthcare, and it's at times quite specialised. So you just don't go into Specsavers and say, listen, we need someone to just keep monitoring her eyes. This is like there's things we've learned and understood over the years that we've to watch for. And our consultant, the same thing. She'd say, contact me immediately if you see this happening. That's gone. So we've been in consultation with the clinic that was providing the service. And they're at the wit's end because this was just a rug pull from under them. Everyone was transferred over to some sort of wait list. There's no dialogue or communication from the department in relation to, is there progress? Is there not progress? What's happening? So we have families all over North Dublin who have lost this service and just don't know what to do. They have children. Some of the children, like my own daughter, is progressing into adult services. That particular discipline, there's lists that are just, you're just looking at years of waiting. She can't wait years. This is something that...
And I presume if it's a specialised, Bernard, it's probably not that even easy to access another provider.
Exactly.
If it isn't the private system, it's probably not that accessible.
No, it's not that accessible. And not only that, but there was a relationship built up and there was a knowledge that her ophthalmologist had in relation to what specific issues or signs she would show that could be a problem. That's gone. I understand, things change, that's fine, but... Literally, it was a letter landed in the door 2 weeks before Christmas. That's gone. Do you want to find somewhere? What? Nobody knew what to find, who to find. Who is this speciality? Who has this? Who
and
doesn't?
In the last nine months, have you been able to find a replacement?
No. It's constant dialogue back and forth. And I get it. Those who are providing the service are trying to find the alternative. They're under massive pressure. They don't know. They've got... We're talking about a few hundred children who've been removed and have lost this service and are under fierce pressure now, the service provider to resume this service. And I've been talking with them, because checking in, trying to say, where are we? What's the progress? Again, now we're looking at, so we have to sort of start from the beginning again. And if we do find someone, I just know for a fact, even if I've transitioned to adult services, Beaumont Hospital, we were told, there's just no places. There's just literally, there's no slots. There's nothing. Now, I'm not going to like just say because my daughter has, but she has her disability. She was mm-hmm. born with her disability. Mm-hmm. This is part of her disability. You would expect ongoing health care. It's usually quite good. But when you have a service and you become reliant on it, and then for it to be yanked from under you with no alternative, only that, do you want to go and find someone? I mean, like, firstly, nobody will say, no, we'll take that patient on due to the fact that, you know, there's a long history there and there's a knowledge and it's a specific type of disability, blah, blah, blah. And so we're currently up in the air. We're in the ether. We don't know what's going on. That's right across the board. Other families, plenty of families. I mean, we get into orthopedics, it's a totally different ballgame altogether.
Yeah, in
swirling around, you have families at their wit's end waiting years for interventions. And at the last minute, just recently there, a couple of weeks ago, a family who were ready to go landed in to be told, it's not happening, time to go home. After, like, it's just, and I don't think people fully understand the implications that it has
I think what I've learned today, even from the text, Bernard, it's only when you're on the waiting list, you know, and as some of our listeners have mentioned in some of the texts, and Marie that was with us a little earlier today, it's only when you're on it and on it for some time you really understand the full impact of this. Like this texter says, I'm currently on a waiting list for back surgery for almost 3 years now. I'm also waiting over 3 months for an epidural injection for help with the pain. In my opinion, there seems to be no communication or coordination between the departments. So thanks for highlighting the subject today. Look, if you're currently waiting on a hospital appointment, if you've been told that you require a referral, if you're waiting to see a consultant, perhaps you've got that appointment and you're now just waiting to get in to see the doctor, we'd love to hear your story on the programme today. We want to talk about this after 1 o'clock. The email, if you want to share that experience with us, is lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. For the moment, we leave it there. Bernard Mulvaney, Brian Turner, Marie and Yvonne, thanks for getting in touch. 087 1400 106. That is the WhatsApp number.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.